crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. They brought death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today what we're going to talk about is the anniversary of the 1 year ago Greek debt deal that was signed August 2021st, the third in the series of debt deals imposed on Greece by what is called the Troika. What's the Troika? The Troika is those pan-European institutions that have arisen, the new institutional forms of global capitalism in the making, the European Central Bank, the European Commission, which is driven by the finance ministers of each of the 19 countries that are part of the Eurozone. The Eurozone is part of the European Union. Well, it's a subset of the European Union. European Union is a customs zone, they call, a free trade zone, exchanging goods and services, you know, like the U.S. with Canada and Mexico. You know, that's a customs union, as they call it in economics, a free trade zone where their tariffs are reduced or eliminated so goods can flow without taxation between the countries. Supposed to increase trade, and therefore more production in the individual countries, therefore more economic growth. That's the fiction. Free trade generates growth. Well, I don't want to get into free trade theory critique here yet, but the European Union is a customs union, and within the European Union is the Eurozone of 19 out of the 29 countries. Well, Britain's just leaving. Others will follow. The European Union Customs Union. Well, the currency union is the Eurozone, the 19 countries that use the euro currency to trade between themselves. Not all the European countries use the euro as currency. But the currency union is another step beyond just a customs union. Okay, the currency union was established in 1999 in Europe. That's when the Eurozone was created. And part of the creation of a currency union means a central bank that issues the currency. That became the European Central Bank, or ECB for short. And the various financial interests in the 19 countries have a body called the European Commission. You know, each country has a finance minister, and that finance minister council is at the core of the European Commission. It meets in Brussels. ECB, European Central Bank, meets in Frankfurt, Germany. Then there is a third element of this troika called the International Monetary Fund, which we know of, which participates with the other two structures within Europe. And, of course, we know the IMF is involved globally as well. The IMF is located in Washington. It's an appendage of the United States, as is the World Bank ever since 1946. And pretty much controlled by the U.S., although the custom is to have a European head, the IMF, and the IMF is located in Washington. That's the trade-off, and the custom is for the U.S. to have someone running the World Bank, which is kind of a funding source for infrastructure programs throughout the world, dominated by the dollar, of course. That's the key, the U.S. dollar. And the IMF is designed to make loans to countries whose economies monetarily get out of whack. If they don't have enough money to finance their trade, or if their currency collapses and they got to borrow money, they do it from the IMF. And that's better than having what happened during the Great Depression of the 30s, where countries didn't have enough money to finance trade, so they devalued their currency, and everybody devalued competitive valuations, and that helped collapse the global depression in the 30s even further than it went, you see. So that's what the IMF does. And the IMF loans money when countries have debt that they can't repay to the private sector, you see. So that's the troika, as we call it, the three-sided pan-European institutions, which are a reflection of growing political, economic, administrative, bureaucratic globalization. These institutions in Europe represent a kind of neoliberal new political forms for controlling the economy. And, of course, if you have these higher-level political forms like the EC, ECB, and so forth, then you give up your national sovereignty. This is all part of treaties. Free Customs Union is a treaty. The currency union is a treaty. A banking union like the ECB is a treaty. And once you have treaties, as we know, with NAFTA and TPP in the United States, you give up your domestic sovereignty. You cannot pass laws, and your own elected representatives and institutions cannot pass laws that contradict the treaty. So you got these bureaucrats negotiating these treaties and taking away your democratic elective rights. It's a challenge to national sovereignty and democracy, as well as a way of concentrating power in the hands of capitalists, particularly bankers, at a level up above the political and economic structures of a nation. It's a way of capitalists globalizing and taking control even further and isolating themselves from the influence of the masses who still have some voting rights, maybe. Okay, so that's what the troika really is. That's also what neoliberalism is. We'll talk about more about neoliberalism and how the Greek debt crisis and the euro banking crisis and now the crisis emerging in Italy and Brexit is a reflection of neoliberalism. You know, what is neoliberalism? We've been talking about that for decades, ever since the late 1970s, but it's been an evolving animal. At one level, very clearly, it is a set of new policies that are designed to transfer wealth and income from the rest of the society to the capitalist class. It's a way of exploitation, you see. Generic neoliberalism is about cutting taxes for investors and corporations and raising taxes on the rest of society, sales taxes and so forth. Well, if you cut the taxes there, you raise them over there. It's about spending cuts in social programs for the rest of society while you subsidize in spending programs, corporations, and the wealthy. Again, a wealth transfer. Generic neoliberalism is about emphasizing monetary policy first and foremost, having the central bank inject liquidity, money, you know, by means of QEs, quantitative easing, zero interest and now negative interest rates, buying up corporate bonds, stocks even now, and, you know, in Japan, Europe, and so forth, corporate bond buying and Japan corporate stock buying by the central bank. At the same time, you impose austerity on the rest of society while you're pumping and all the money into the wealthy. And, of course, that results in, you know, massive accelerated income inequality. Austerity also means wage compression, holding down wages through various means, changing the labor structure, labor market, the structure of labor markets, you know, the part-time temporary jobs mostly and so forth, the gig economy, et cetera, holding down wages that way. People don't get wage increases, so households and consumers and workers have to borrow more debt. Okay, so that means they're paying their future wages in the form of interest payments. So the bankers are extracting not just wealth from your current wages, but they're extracting it from your future wages. Right? Or they privatize Social Securities and pension plans and so forth, another way to extract wealth from interest. Right? So rising debt is the consequence for households and consumers because they don't have the wage growth, right? And it's also rising debt on the private business side because interest rates are so low, corporations and businesses just borrow. Right? They issue corporate bonds and commercial paper and everything, and they raise their corporate debt, and they take all this free money, and they pay it to their stockholders, or they speculate in financial markets with it. Or they just sit on it. They hoard it. You know, we've never had more cash hoarding going on with businesses, bankers in history here. You know, after they've paid out, you know, historic $5 trillion in the U.S. alone in the last 5 years in dividends and stock buybacks. So, you know, they're funneling all this free money that they're making from squeezing wages and profits and free money that they're borrowing from the central banks, making it possible. And they're just sending all this to their big stockholders, or they're sitting on it, or they're speculating on it, but they're not investing in real growth. They're not investing in real financial assets that create real jobs, that create real wages and incomes. Oh, and productivity collapses as a result. Big surprise. Right? And then they turn to free trade, you see. Free trade is, we can't get our own growth going because of these policies. And what we're going to do is try to beggar our neighbors, steal some of their exports. Well, real investment has collapsed in the U.S. to 2% or less. And, of course, Europe and Japan, even worse. Productivity is collapsing everywhere as a result of these policies, neoliberal policies, that enrich the financial side in particular, but big corporations too, leave mom-and-pop businesses struggling and leave workers even less below, you know. And free trade is the consequence of this, to try to get it going. But free trade means everybody's beggaring their economic neighbor, right? I'm going to try to steal exports from you, you steal them from me, you know, with all our QE monetary central bank policy that drives down the currency. I'm going to try to get a competitive advantage from you, country X, country Y, you know, by driving my currency down. I'm going to steal some of your exports. You know, then you're going to do it too, steal some of my exports. It goes on. It's a zero-sum game. Slide to the bottom. And we see this, lack of real investment and all this emphasis on free trade. And what do we see? Global trade is stagnant or declining almost at this point. Productivity is nothing, falling. Real investment is down to almost zero. Oh, but speculation, financial asset investment is booming. And the markets are booming. And the 1% is getting richer and richer and richer, and the rest of us are treading water at best. Okay, that's neoliberalism, you see. Now, neoliberalism in Europe is a weak form of this generic neoliberalism I just explained to you. And that weak form neoliberalism is resulting in massive debt in the periphery of Europe. And Greece is an example of that. Maybe the worst example of that, because it's the weakest of the periphery economies in Europe. But it's not just Greece, you know. It's Italy, it's Ireland, it's Spain, Portugal, so forth, you know. And now it's spreading into the rest of Europe. We have a banking crisis brewing in Europe. The banks never recovered because of these neoliberal policies. Let me back up. Let's talk more about Greece. And now that I've given you this overview, and we're going to hold out this idea of weak form Euro neoliberalism as the cause of Greek debt, and not just Greek debt, but peripheral debt throughout Europe. And why? Because the banks in Europe have never recovered. And this whole debt buildup is one way to keep those banks from collapsing, because debt means you pay interest. Right? And that interest on all this government and private sector debt in the periphery of Europe is flowing back to the European banks to keep them afloat. There's a study that was released earlier this year by the European Institute of Management and Technology. In other words, a business source, ironically of all places, in Germany. Okay, the ESMT, entitled, Where Did the Greek Bailout Money Go? Right? Well, the conclusion is, it went 95% of all the Greek debt payments, principal and interest payments, since 2010, have gone to the Euro banks. And by the Euro banks, I mean, you know, mostly the German banks, the Dutch banks, the French banks. That's where the money has gone. Interest on the debt. And how much debt has Greece accumulated since 2010? Over $400 billion of debt, which hasn't changed. In other words, they're not retiring the debt by paying for the debt, because they can't pay the full principal and interest on the debt that has been given them, or forced on them in the case of Greece. So the Troika keeps imposing more debt on Greece in order to pay the old debt. In other words, these pan-European capitalist institutions are pumping money into the periphery. Greece is the most classic example. Pumping money into the periphery so the periphery can make payments back to their northern core European bankers. It's going ultimately to the banks. So you got the Troika, you know, you got ECB and EC with his big bailout funds called the ESM, European Stability Mechanism, loaning money to Greece again and again and again in order to allow Greece to make payments back to them, which they then distribute to the banks. It's a circular flow of money from these European institutions back to the private sector in northern core Europe. It's a form of wealth extraction, you see. It's a new form of financial imperialism. I have a new book coming out next month called Looting Greece, An Emerging New Financial Imperialism. I'll talk about imperialism and how imperialist theory has to change and adapt to the new financial capital realities in the 21st century. Imperialist theory is heavily influenced by Marxist theory, which is still laboring, no pun intended, in assumptions that all wealth and imperialism comes from production, extracting wealth from workers in the process of production. Well, there's a new form of imperialism going on here. The states are involved. The capitalist states are directly involved. And it is a financial imperialism, extracting wealth from interest and other financial securities from the weaker states and economies that become sucked into these free trade zones, currency zones, banking union zones. You see, it's a way of capitalism globally exploiting more efficiently and in greater amounts than ever before other smaller states. Right? It's a new way, a new form of exploitation. Now, there's always been financial exploitation. Don't get me wrong. You know, when multinational corporations move into a country, you know, here come the bankers with them, and the bankers make loans to the countries and to them to start up the business, and of course they get their interest from the loan. But that's private sector. That's corporation to corporation, you know, or corporation to worker exploitation, both financial and non-financial, at a local level. What we're talking about in financial imperialism is the state takeover, right? The capitalist states play the key role, and their central banks play the key role. And, of course, the capitalists and the central banks in these weaker economies that have been sucked into these pan-European or whatever free trade zones and currency zones, right, get sucked in. And the capitalists in the indigenous local countries get a cut of this pie, you know, or their banks are taken over by the banks of the core, or, you know, there's other ways of controlling at a private sector level the business institutions of a country. But, you know, the local bankers become an appendage of the core bankers, and they go along with it, and the investors go along with it, and the big businesses go along with it because they're linked into the whole process of exploitation, you see, and they get their cut. Who doesn't get their cut are small businesses and workers who have to end up paying the interest on this massive debt accumulation. Well, I talk about this in my book by Clarity Press. You can find out more about it by going to Clarity Press / Rasmus. Or you can go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, or website, which is Jack Rasmus Productions, or a.k.a. Kyklos Productions, kyklosproductions.com. Either one will take you to more information about that. But the book comes out next month. What are the major themes of this book? Well, it covers this whole period from the origins of the Eurozone, or what's called the European Monetary Union, 1999, and the origins of the Greek debt, which I describe in early chapters, are part of this evolution of a weak form Euro neoliberalism, and the dominance of Euro neoliberalism by the Germans and their allies in Northern Europe, you know, the Dutch and some Eastern Europeans and the Finns and so forth, right? They've come to dominate the Eurozone, the monetary, the currency union, you see. In 1999, they adopted the currency union and the euro in 17 different countries over the next few years. And in 2005, what happened was Germany imposed austerity on its workers, drove down its workers' wages, so that after 2005, Germany was the most efficient producer of goods. And now they had the euro, the currency. So they pushed these goods after 2005 into the periphery of Europe. Oh, how did the periphery pay for it? Well, these new institutions and private institutions, the private banks in Northern Europe and you know, the ECB, pushed money, loans, into the private sector in Greece and elsewhere so that they could buy this new flow of German goods and Northern goods. So the money came to the periphery, and the periphery turned it around and bought the goods, sent the money right back to German banks and German, and when I say German, I mean Germany and its allies. There's, you know, a handful of allies, but enough to dominate the councils in these pan-European institutions. Right. So there's a German origin of the Greek debt. And when I say German, I say, of course, German bankers and businesses. I don't mean German people or the country. I mean the bankers and interests, political and economic interests that dominate these institutions like the European Commission and the European Central Bank and so forth. You see, the European Central Bank is not really a true central bank. It does what the coalition of national central banks in Europe tell it to do. And Germany has a majority on that council and a veto power on that council in the ECB. The ECB is just a federation of national central banks. It's unlike the Federal Reserve in the U.S. I mean, the Federal Reserve is not a coalition of 50 states' central banks. The states in the U.S. don't have central banks. There's just one central bank. Right? So New York or California or Texas do not dominate. You know, the 12 districts of the U.S. central bank do not dominate the decisions. I mean, the capitalists, you know, run it from the center. Right. Well, Europe doesn't have that kind of a true central bank, and therefore true central bank supervision over the private banks. And what happened in 2008-09 is, we had this banking crash everywhere, and then Europe had another deep recession in 2011-13, and the European banks have never really recovered from that. And the solution has been to subsidize and support those banks from collapsing further by a number of means. One, pumping all this free money late, but eventually the European Central Bank pumping free money into the private banks, and there forms a QE and zero rates and negative rates now, and the banks, European banks, are still in trouble. Oh, and subsidizing by extracting wealth in the form of interests from the periphery economies. And I was throwing liquidity after what is essentially an insolvency crisis going on. The banks have never really recovered. And that's because the Euro Central Bank is not a true central bank and hasn't been able to go after the banks, private banks that were in trouble, and say, okay, you're out of business, you know, we're going to consolidate you and so forth. This is what has to be done when you have a crisis. And you either do that or set up a bad bank, take their bad assets and off their books and put it in a government bad bank, etc. There's solutions, but they never did it in Europe. And they started doing it too late, and the banks are still in a crisis. Okay, so Euro neoliberalism is about subsidizing the private sector in Northern Europe at the expense of the debt in the periphery and interest payments and debt and interest payments in the periphery. Well, they've done this with Greece, being the most dramatic example, perhaps, Italy close behind. Three bailouts have occurred, 2010, 2012, last year, 2015, in August the 20th, which this is the anniversary, and then a mini bailout restructuring again this past April, which I've talked about. IMF secret deals, WikiLeaks revealed their secret deals to force Greece to take on more austerity and more debt, and to do it before its major July debt payment came due in Greece. Because they didn't want, the IMF did not want a possibility of another Greek debt crisis in July of 2016 when they were facing the Brexit vote in June 2015. And as we know, Brexit lost. In other words, Brexit won, leaving the Eurozone, or European Union, the customs union, right? The IMF and the EC were all maneuvering this to get Greece out of the way again, so they would not have a double crisis, you see. So they imposed another mini debt on them, additional debt, in April of this year. So like 3.5 debt deals. And Greece is still $440 billion in debt. In other words, we've had all these debt deals since 2010, Now, at the end of 2010, Greece's debt was 172% of its GDP. Right? At the end of 2015, earlier this year, it's still 177% of GDP. So there's been no debt reduction. All this money imposed on Greece is so that Greece can repay previous debt to the Eurozone, to the Troika, and to the private institutions, bankers, that the money eventually ends up in. You see, nothing really gets resolved. But how does Greece pay this debt? Austerity. It doesn't do it. It's not allowed to do it by growing its economy. The Troika says, no, you will cut spending, especially on social programs, especially on government employment, and lower your wages in government, and get rid of pensions in government, government employees, and therefore the rest to follow suit in the private sector, and sell off your national public goods, you know, sell off your ports to who? You know, to bidders from Germany. Sell off your ports, sell off your railroad, your public railway systems, sell off, you know, your utility systems, your electric grid, and so on and so forth. And you sell them at fire sale prices. In other words, real low prices. It's a real scam. Those who buy this are the wealthy European private sector investors and global. They come off with a real low price. And that's a form of financial exploitation as well. You know, to subsidize fire sale prices, sales of these public goods and assets. And, of course, then you would have to include in a calculation of financial imperialism not just the fire sale prices of these public assets, but the income stream that they generate that goes back to Northern Europe. You know, there's fees for using the Greek ports. There's fees for using the railroads, for the utilities. Well, that sucks out of Greece and goes north. Constant income flows from financial arrangements. And, of course, you know, to pay for this debt that's imposed, because debt has an interest payment on it, the Troika insists, with Germany in the background and its allies, you know, pulling the strings, insists that you have austerity. In other words, the Greek people have to pay the interest on the debt with tax increases, sales tax increases. You know, they pay 24% sales tax now in Greece. Income taxes, property taxes. By the way, the Troika does not like Greece to raise taxes on wealthy and the corporations. Wonder why. Wonder whose interest they're interested in. But it's, you know, it's sales taxes, it's property taxes for small businesses. You know, that's austerity, you see. Tax increases are part of austerity as well as spending cuts. Ah, but spending where? You know, in this latest deal, you know, they actually increased defense spending. While they're cutting everything else in Greece, they increased defense spending. Well, that shows you where the interests lie. You know, and all this is being dictated onto Greece by the Troika and their representatives in the ECB and the EC in particular, because most of the debt refinancing now is coming out of the European Commission, you see, the special funds, the European Stability Mechanism Fund. This is where the lion's share comes from. Right? Anyway, in January of last year, 2015, January 2015, a new party came into power called Syriza in Greece, based upon a program that said, we don't want any more debt, and we're going to lower the burden of austerity, because austerity is keeping us in a depression. And Greece has been in the depression ever since 2008-09. You know, I'm depression, 25% unemployment, 50% youth unemployment. That's a depression. You know, no wage growth, wage cuts, wages have dropped 20% across the board. That's a depression going on for that long. Undoubtedly, you can't even argue that. Well, when you have a depression, you can't generate enough tax revenue because you don't have business and workers working to produce the tax revenue. And then when you cut taxes anyway, that makes it even worse. In order from which to pay the interest on the debt. And there was no growth. You don't generate revenue to pay the interest and principal on the debt. So what? Solution is, well, we're going to give you more debt to pay old interest and principal payments. And they just keep piling on the debt. And they like it that way. The Troika likes it, you see. The Eurozone likes it. The German ally, Germany and their allies like that. You know, they want to keep that. It benefits their economies nicely. They like this arrangement, and as long as they dominate, you know, the stronger the economies dominate these capitalist euro in this case institutions. They love this, you know. And we see this emerging, you know, with the TPP and NAFTA and so forth. This is part of the evolution of capitalism in the 21st century. You know, you start out with customs union, free trade zones, right? And then you migrate those custom free trade zones into a currency union. And if the currency is the dollar and it's going to dominate the TPP, right, you'll use more and more dollars for trade within these countries. And pretty soon some of these countries will adopt the dollar as the trade currency, then as their own currency. Eventually, you know, this is part of the evolution. And then central bank, the U.S. Central Bank, Federal Reserve, becomes more and more powerful globally within these unions because the dollar is what's being used, and the central bank is, you know, the conduit for the dollar. And pretty soon you have an integration of the central banks. Well, the smaller economies become more and more dependent on the dollar, more and more dependent on the powerful central bank. They lose more and more of their domestic sovereignty. They become economic protectorates of the most powerful neo-colonial, neoliberal economy. We see this emerging on a more of a microcosm, not a global scale, but microcosm scale in Europe itself. We see the euro imposed and the banking union imposed, weak banking union albeit, but nonetheless, on these peripheral economies that become increasingly dependent on money flows and export goods flows to the center. And if the center is dominated by the most powerful economy, which is Germany, and its allies, you know, there's key allies there so that they can dominate the EC, European Commission, and dominate the ECB, they run the show. And they run it the way they want it. That benefits their economy at the expense of the other economies. That's where capitalism is going. You can see it emerging in Europe in this evolution, you know, from a free trade zone customs union to a currency union to a banking union, and eventually to a fiscal union, although that's not in the cards yet in the Eurozone. In the process of this evolution, though, it's very difficult. Crises exist along the line because it's not fully integrated. It occurs in stages, and that's the problem, you see. And they have crises all along the way in the course of the stages. Okay, so Greece, still in debt, over $400 billion after 6 years and 3.5 debt deals, and another one's coming, no doubt. As long as there's austerity imposed as part of these deals, and that's what the Germans like, you see. The Germans like austerity. They like wage compression because they did it and succeeded with their working class in 2005. And they think, well, if we did it, you know, you got to do it. But you can't compare Greece today with, or even in 2010, with, after the crisis, with Germany in 2005 when things were booming. But the German financial minister there, Wolfgang Schäuble, you know, and his group believe this is the case, right? And they say that, look, Greece, what you've got to do is what we did, which is you've got to take it out of your working class. We need labor market reforms and labor market restructuring. That's the solution for you, Greece, to start growing again, and therefore you don't need any more debt from us. In other words, take it out of your working class in another way. Instead of extracting interest and paying us, well, then just extract direct wealth from them and pay us. Grow out, invest, and pay us, you see, one way or another. So how did this all continue? You know, well, in 2009, when the crash came, first of all, let me back up. Debt began to build up in the private sector after the creation of the Eurozone in 1999. And what was called the Lisbon Agreement in 2004-05, where Germany takes it out on its working class, becomes export super competitive, and now they got the euro, so they can push this export competitiveness into the periphery, which they do, and now they dominate these institutions like the ECB and the EC that just loans the money to the private sector in Greece to buy German exports. Private sector becomes deeply indebted. And then the crash comes in 2008-09, and the private sector can now not pay Germany and the Northern Core on the borrowings that it undertook prior to 2009. Well, that happened everywhere, you know, with the crash. But then, in 2009, the EC and the ECB intervene in Greece, and they say to Greece, oh, you got this huge debt that you can't pay now in the private sector. We're going to loan you, the Greek government, money, and Greek central bank money, so you can then bail out the private sector in Greece, the banks and so forth, so that those private banks and businesses can make their payments on the private debt they incurred before 2009 to our northern banks. So they bail out, they give the money, 110 billion euros in the 2010 debt deal, to the Greek government and Greek central bank to bail out its private sector to send the money back to Germany. See, that's how it starts. So what you're doing, what they did, was to transfer the private sector debt onto the government, Greek government balance sheet. That occurred everywhere in 2008-09. Bailed out the banks at the expense of the balance sheets on the government side, you know. That's what QE is. The central bank prints money, buys up the bad debt, and the debt rises on the central bank's balance sheet as it falls on the private sector balance sheets. You see, it's just a transfer of debt. But it sits on the government side now. Okay, so that's how the debt started, you know, and it's just coming out now that there's some evidence of phoning up the numbers by the Troika in 2009-10. You know, they send in their experts and said, they looked at the Greek books and they said, oh, wow, you know, you owe 15% of your GDP, you know, the debt, rather not your 6% that you were saying you had, therefore, wow, we really have to have debt negotiations here, and we got to give you some of this credit and so you can take on more debt and pay us more interest. You know, now it's coming out that it looks like the people that the Troika sent into Greece pumped up the numbers to make the debt look worse than it is. In fact, Greece is now trying to go after the guy, the representative for the Troika, who did that. Well, too little, too late, I'd say. At the time, a new Greek government, of course, in this crisis following 2008-09 global crash, it came to power called PASOK, the centrist They were centrist social democrats, you see, PASOK, P-A-S-O-K. And they actually called in the Troika, you know, calling in the fox to guard the hen house. Then the debt thing went on in the 2010 debt crisis, and they ended up loaning Greece 110 billion euros so it could bail out its private sector and, of course, also bail out the government sector because you're in the depression, 2008-09, or serious recession like everywhere else, and government revenues are collapsing, and spending has to rise to maintain safety nets, unemployment insurance, and so forth, you know. So there is some legitimate government debt that begins to occur, as well as bailing out the private debt. Okay. And that's part of the $110 billion. But then what happens is there's another deep recession in Europe in 2011-13. So, you know, that affects the recession in Greece, and on top of that, of course, the 2010 big austerity measures imposed by the German coalition on Greece. So you have these multiple forces that are causing the Greek government debt to get worse. You know, austerity imposed on Greece, bailing out the private sector, collapse of the European economy again in 2011, and if you're part of the Eurozone, you know, you can't sell your exports to the rest of the Eurozone because there's no demand for them, you know, so you're in trouble. Multiple forces drove down or raised the Greek debt in 2012, another crisis throughout Europe periphery, and even more bailout occurred, this time almost $200 billion in bailout money imposed on Greece. Big bailout. The second big bailout was also to bail out the private investors who had invested in Greek bonds, Greek government bonds, and were speculating, because when you have a crisis, the bond prices, you know, go, interest rates go way up, and you can speculate on that. Hedge funds, global hedge funds, not just Europeans, had accumulated about $50-60 billion in private debt. Well, the second bailout in 2012 was designed by the Troika to pay off those folks first and foremost and transfer their debt onto the Greek government debt once again. And it was really a restructuring to bail out the private investors and make Greece pay that price. And that's why it was almost double of what the first bailout in 2010 was. Okay. And once again, the European study here, the ESMT, European Management Technology Institute, School of Management Technology, a white paper here, where did the Greek bailout money go? You know, all of this 110 billion euros, which is about $150 billion at the time, and the 200 billion in 2012, 350 billion. You know, where did it go? 95% went to the banks in Europe. 95%. It tells you what this is all about, this whole circular flow of dependency of money flows here and debt and interest payments, all designed to keep European banks, including German banks, afloat or help them stay afloat. So Syriza comes to power here in January of 2015, promising to end the austerity that is a reflection of this debt as a means of imposing on the whole society, payment of the debt, you see. It's not just exploitation of company by company and worker by worker and company anymore. It's state-to-state exploitation, you know, engineered, structured, operated by states, in collusion with each other. Of course, the Greek workers as a whole paid for this, and small businesses pay for this. Now, that's what the austerity is all about. Extract the payment from them at the expense of wages and jobs and so forth, right? So Syriza comes to power in January 15 and says, we're going to change this. You know, we don't want any more debt on debt, and we need a break on this austerity. You, Detroit, have to give us some way of growing out of this debt instead of imposing more and more austerity on us. And they came to power, and they attempted to negotiate, but they fell into a couple real errors from the very beginning. What were Syriza's errors? There's been a lot of discussion of this, and they say, oh, you know, it was this, their leader, Alex Tsipras, who just caved in, and, lost his nerve, and in July he agreed to whatever the Troika wanted, July of 2015. Well, it's not that simple. Right. There were some real strategic errors that Syriza had undertaken in its whole approach. And the most serious, I think, was the nostalgic and naive belief that they could rally European social democracy behind their case and get their friends, their European social democratic friends, who still populated the European Commission to some extent, to get the German hardliners, you know, Wolfgang Schäuble and friends, banker and friends, to relent and let up on the austerity and allow Greece to spend to grow its way out of the debt instead of just cutting its way on austerity, which made it more and more difficult, because the more austerity, the more depression, the more depression, the more greater deficits, and therefore the greater debt that was needed. You see, that was the fourth reason that kept growing the Greek debt. The initial privatization of debt, 2008-9, the 2008-9 crash and the depression that followed, and then the second European depression, loading debt on debt from 2010 to 2013. You know, and then the austerity itself that caused the depression in Greece, far serious than everywhere. All these things added to the debt. And every time there was a crisis, a negotiation, these debt crisis, you had capital flight out of Greece. The rich, mostly businesses and investors, took their money out of Greek banks and sent it north again, into Northern European banks. So, they benefit. Northern banks benefited from these crises with this capital flight. And that meant that Greek banks collapsed even further each time there was a negotiation that had to be recapitalized. In other words, more money pumped into them. More money was pumped into them by the ECB and the EC. And, of course, Greece had to pay the interest on that. That added to their debt as well. Well, Syriza made a big mistake thinking that the liberals in the Eurozone and in the so-called Social Democrats in France, Socialist Party, you know, and Labour Party in Britain and others, you know, liberals in Italy, might be able to leverage and change Europe. You see, because it's a big myth that Europe is social democratic. Social democracy collapsed in Europe years ago, replaced by European neoliberalism. It's just a vestige, a weak vestige of itself. It's trying to rise again with all these new parties on the left. You know, Five Star Movement in Italy, Podemos in Spain. Syriza, the Linke in Germany, you know. Labour Party trying to revitalize itself under Corbyn, but they're coming from behind. The powers that run are neoliberal. You know, and Socialist Party in France is not Socialist Party. It's not even Social Democratic anymore. It's carrying out the neoliberal. Let's do labour market reform and press down wages here to get more exports for business. You know, they're just doing. Social Democrat, so-called, in France, are doing the bidding of the bankers, you see. And in Germany, the same thing. The German Social Democratic Party some time ago split, and the official wing is now a junior partner to neoliberalism in Germany. They're part of the coalition, Merkel's coalition. But the Syriza thought that they could get these people behind it, and they would help leverage them in negotiations and get a deal. But clearly, negotiations show, and I have five chapters that trace the Syriza negotiations in my book, Looting Greece. You know, from the time they transitioned to power, you know, PASOK and New Democracy, the center and right-wing parties, collapse in late 2014. And they come to power. The maneuvers trying to, the Troika trying to keep New Democracy, the conservative right-wing party, in power, fail. In November, December 2014, Syriza wins the parliamentary elections. 2015 comes to power. And as I said, their program, based on what was called the Thessaloniki program, was no more debt. Lift this austerity so we can grow our way out of it. But Syriza always believed from the beginning that, you know, we're going to pay our debt. We're going to pay the ECB, especially, and the IMF, especially. What we want is, you know, the liberals in the European Commission to lift some of the debt there. Ah, but the European Commission policies are dominated by the Council of Finance Ministers, and each country in the Eurozone has a seat, and Germany and its allies in that council control, ultimately, what the EC does through the Council of Finance Ministers. And, you know, the liberals, some of them bumped up trying to help Greece a little bit, you know, bumped up against this coalition, and they were turned back every time. So, it's, you know, Tsipras, Alex Tsipras, and his finance minister, Tom Yannis Varoufakis, attempted to elicit the support of the liberals, and it failed miserably because those people have no influence or very little influence anymore, and they collapsed, you know, ultimately behind the Germans and their coalition. And, of course, the Hollande government, socialist government in France, just gave lip service, criticizing Greece and Syriza periodically, you know, playing both against the middle. You can't negotiate your way. And the other, with the Eurozone, particularly since this time around, 2015, that the Troika is much stronger position. Syriza makes strategic and tactical errors, and I talk about this in the book at great length. But the Troika was far more powerful. Okay, we're going to continue the discussion on Greece next week and talk about what is financial imperialism.